Anna DeVlantis in for King John. Welcome to the Noon Business Hour. It's 12:12 this Monday. So I'm looking at some of the latest headlines about this FTX crypto exchange. And the founder, two senior executives are under observation by authorities, holed up in a luxurious Bahamas resort owned by Tiger Woods and Justin Timberlake. A lot of people wondering what their next move might be. A new report says that Sam Bankman-Fried, 30 years old, is plotting an escape somewhere, but he says, no, I'm just holed up here while we're figuring out what's next. The Wall Street Journal reported that the U.S. Department of Justice is investigating into FTX's practices. Elise Glink can shed some light on all this. This reads like a spy movie, but it's real, and it's very confusing. Elise, how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you, Anna. It is confusing, and it's very troubling, and a good, really, wave the flag for anybody who's investing in crypto or thinking about investing in crypto. What happened here was pretty interesting, and we don't have all the details yet. I don't think anybody really understands it. Maybe not even the former CEO, Sam Bankman-Fried, who resigned as CEO over the weekend. But apparently, his firm secretly transferred $10 billion of customer funds from FTX to a related company. He had another one, a trading company called Alameda Research. And then of that money, $1 billion of customer funds have vanished. Now, a couple of things to keep in mind. When you go on these different crypto exchanges, you are giving them a lot of room to maneuver, take your money and use it in ways that if you put cash in a bank, the bank would not be allowed to do it.
You know, I think that's the troubling thing, Elise. It's, you know, you wonder, you put your money there thinking it's in crypto and crypto is what it is. But I didn't know. Do most people know that then the people who operate these exchanges could then take your money and leverage it into other asset classes? I didn't know that. Is that allowed? Is that supposed to be that way?
Well, if you look at all the fine print, yes, it's allowed because you've signed an agreement that basically is as long as I'm sure Apple's famous, terms and conditions statement that goes on for 52 pages. And it allows them to basically do whatever they want. Also, these funds, crypto funds, are not insured. And as we've seen over the weekend, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of crypto was taken from FTX. What was left was emptied. It was almost as if somebody went in, unlocked it, and emptied out the vaults. And so there is some real concern about, you know, these funds are not insured. Maybe people don't really understand that. Crypto novices who are investing, you know, huge amounts of whatever cash they have available and net worth may not understand just how risky these investments actually are. Because for years, Anna, it has seemed that everybody who put a dollar into crypto got $10 back or $100 back.
You heard so many stories, people buying real estate with crypto that, you know, in Miami, the mayor was saying, we're all about crypto. We're going to be the crypto capital. And people were making all kinds of transactions using this and putting a lot of their hard-earned money. Some you know, tech workers were saying, I want to get paid in crypto. It just feels as if now the whole industry is shaken, although you do see CoinDesk, I know, has come forward. A couple others in the crypto world, Crypto.com, is saying they have 70 million people on their platform globally. And their business model, they say, is completely different from FTX. Do you believe that? Are these there other safer, if as far as crypto can be safe, are there safer places in the crypto world?
I have no idea what is considered safe. Let's just be honest. I don't think anybody else does either. We have the federal government just announced that they recovered $3.2 billion of Bitcoin that was heisted. When you start seeing these kinds of numbers fly around, and that you can lose, if you lose your key, you lose access to all of your funds. Supposedly nobody else can find it. This to me is not anywhere close to being a safe investment by any, you know, stretch of the imagination. And I really think that people don't understand it. It's concerning to me that people want to be paid in crypto. It's concerning to me that Fidelity Investments has now built in the facility to have crypto investments and that many other major trading platforms are looking at doing the same, because that normalizes something that right now I'm not sure what it's built on. It seems to me that the value of crypto is simply that there isn't as much out there as everybody wants, and it artificially raises and lowers the price.
Mm-hmm. That's the best explanation I've heard. I still don't understand it and don't pretend to. But when you see something like this, you know that a lot of people are getting hurt. More with Elise Glink in a moment. Let's check in, though, with Bob Kessler now for a weather and market update. Wintrust Business Lunch continues here. Anna DeVlanta's in for King John today. Elise Glink is here with us, owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. You hear her here on the weekends here, Sunday mornings on WGN. Elise, just another one more thought about this FTX. I guess to me, it's like, how did no one know this was happening until it got this big that they're missing $8 billion and all these investors can't get their money back or don't know how? I'm looking here. The FTX got a higher ESG score on leadership and governance, than ExxonMobil. So when they rate these companies and say, how's your leadership and governance? They were scoring super high. It seemed like this was legitimate. I know they were big political donors. This seemed to escape everybody's radar.
Yeah, I think that when you have people who are just electric and they, like Sam Bankman-Fried, just kind of wowed everybody. And prior to starting this up, he had apparently worked for a different company and made that company hundreds of millions of dollars. And as I said to somebody over the weekend, when you are 25, 26, and 27, and you make hundreds of millions of dollars for yourself and your employer, you start to think you can bend the rules of the universe. And I really think that, you know, he was great at telling this story. He brought everybody along for the ride. You know, you have these wunderkinds from Silicon Valley. He's got, you know, a whole bunch of people who signed up. It reminds me of a few other people from Silicon Valley who may have dropped out of college and then went on to do this. Well, the thing, though, that I think is something maybe not as well known is that apparently his parents, one or maybe both, are law professors at Stanford. At Stanford Law School. And so, you know, you would like to think that parents who are lawyers and law professors would have instilled a little of respect for him for rules, regulations, and making sure you're staying on the right side of things. That said, maybe he thought he was, and it all got away, and with a click of a button and things that weren't labeled correctly, somehow, you know, money disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
We'll find out.
It's hard to control your kids at a certain age, though, too, isn't it? I mean, they don't. My mine's 11, and she doesn't even really listen now, so I don't know. But I do want to make sure we get to this, Elise. Jeff Bezos has given away $124 billion in his lifetime. Okay, that's a lot of money. He just handed Dolly Parton's charity $100 million. I don't even think she knew. Just because he respected what she's doing there for educating children, her love and compassion, and he admired her, and he said, you know what, Dolly, here's $100 million. How about that?
So, you know what's interesting is, so his ex-wife, Mackenzie Bezos, has given away billions of dollars, and she still has billions more to give. And what she has found and what other people of great wealth have found when they're giving away money is that the thing you want to do is be able to leverage that. You don't want $100 million to just be the be-all and end-all, even though that's a huge amount of money. You would love it if you could find a way to leverage that up, and that $100 million becomes $200 million of worth and value. And so what Dolly Parton has done, and I didn't realize that all of the things that she does with her foundation, but she has managed to send 100 million books, more than that, 200 million books to young children in five countries. She's really focused on popular literacy efforts. So she's trying to get more kids to read and read better. And so we all know that if you can educate, you're able to lift up not just an individual, but a whole family and support that whole family out of, hopefully, poverty. And so Jeff Bezos gave her $100 million to continue that work. But think about that. $100 million when you've got $100 billion plus to give away.
Yeah, a lot more to give.
It's just the beginning. And so I think he's decided most of it is going to go towards the planet and warming and how they're going to stop global warming. And that's a really wonderful goal, and I hope he figures out a smart way to do it.
You're right about his ex, McKinsey, who gave away, it's out of the blue, to a lot of local organizations.
She did. She gave, actually, $9 million to YWCA of Metropolitan Chicago.
Wow.
And they had no idea they were getting that much money from her. And they
I remember the Mexican Cultural Center came on the air with us and said that we had no idea this was coming our way, but it's truly transformational kind of money. To have a gift like that, it sets up a legacy for the future. And she just dropped this on all these organizations after having her people, I think, research them and figure out where she truly can make that difference. And in the middle of the pandemic, boom, she did it. And I hope to see more of this. Maybe we'll see more with Jeff Bezos. Is he on a roll, you think?
I hope so. I mean, if you're giving it away at $100 million a pop, yeah, you're going to start to make a little bit of a dent, particularly when the stock market is down and your stock's not worth quite as much as it was.
Right.
But it's interesting when you have these super wealthy people, what they choose to do with their money. And the truth is, I don't know about you, Anna, but I don't actually need more than $1 billion
No.
in my life.
No.
So there's lots that they can all give away and a lot of places that really have a need for it.
Yeah, for sure. You can live on a lot less than that, and good for him if he's deciding to give it away. Thank you, Elise. We'll be listening this weekend for sure. And thanks for joining.
You bet, Anna.
Elise Glink there with Think Glink Media, Best Money Moves. You catch her Sunday mornings, of course, here at 6:30 on WGN. It's 12:27. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Anna DeVlantis in for King John Moore in a moment on WGN.
Today's show is sponsored by Calamos Investments. Here's Anna DeVlantis hosting the John Williams Show.
12:36, the Wintrust Business Lunch continues here. We're chugging along on a Monday. Anna in for King John today. And Matt Freund has joined us. He's with Calamos as well. We've been talking with the team at Calamos Investments throughout the show today about big picture economy. We're going to get a little more targeted here with Matt. He's going to kind of help us decide some of the areas where he sees possibilities for potential in investments, some of the things they're telling their clients. And Matt, welcome. Good to see you.
It's great to be here.
You know, just off air quickly, let's jump into this real quick. We were talking about airfares and how they've, they're pretty high for the holidays. I'm just looking at this story here. Airline executives say based on bookings, they expect huge demand for flights over the holidays, but they say the best deals are already gone. They are super high. Jump in and get yours now. You're not going to get a better deal. They said airfares in October were up 43%. From a year ago, and the airlines, you know, are saying that we have fewer flights right now, too, from 2019, even though the number of passengers are back at pre-pandemic levels. And you fly a ton for business, so you've seen that, the packed planes and
right.
all of that.
So one of the things that's going on is that goods inflation, so the price of things you can buy and ship or order on Amazon, those prices actually peaked in the summer and have been coming down, but services haven't peaked and are actually bouncing along at fairly high levels. So it's a combination. There is clearly a shortage of pilots. There is clearly pressure on the energy side.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want that service, if you want that vacation or that trip, you're going to have to pay for it.
You are definitely going to have to pay for it. So get on it now. But we have some other things we do want you to talk about, which is kind of why you're here. And I think, you know, we did go into the big picture of the economy. A lot of questions right now. Uncertainty continues. That's the name of the game. Inflation, front and center. A lot of people asking about what's going to happen. And the news, Matt, that just crossed that I do want to get into is the Fed. All eyes are on the Fed, but how high will they continue to hike these interest rates to control inflation? And right now, we're getting some guidance from the Vice Chair Brainard. She says it may be soon be appropriate to move to a slower pace of rate hikes.
And we think that's right. So look, by hindsight, the Fed made a mistake. They should have started hiking rates over a year ago. But every kid knows if you're behind in a race, you have to run faster to catch up. But once you've caught up to the group where you should be, it's okay to slow down. In fact, if you don't, you may get further ahead and take all the draft yourself. So the Fed was behind in the race. The Fed ran really far and fast to catch up. But now we think it's appropriate for the Fed to move at the speed that they should have had they started on time. So, yeah, I think what you're going to see, they're going to downshift to 50 and then pretty quickly to 25s.
So they've been doing 75 BIP rate hikes, and now they're going to move to 50. Now, what does that translate into English, though, to all of us about how that impacts the economy, how that affects us.
So how does it affect the economy and us? So rates are still going up. If you're holding out because, you know, you heard about this Fed pivot and it means that rates are coming down, I think that's a mistake. We actually think rates are going to be somewhat sticky. So they're going to get to a level they're comfortable with. So my estimate is that it's between 5 and 5.5. So they're going to get there. And then we think they're going to leave it there and let it work through the economy. So that's number one. Don't expect rates to come down. Number two is as you get closer to that destination, again, you have to be careful. You don't want to, damage the ship as it comes into the dock. So they will be slowing down, but their destination hasn't changed. And number three, the thing that they didn't talk about was their balance sheet. They will be continuing to shrink their balance sheet and take liquidity out of the system. That's not that bad for Main Street, but it could cause some more volatility on Wall Street. And we think that's likely.
What does that mean for mortgages, for car loans and that kind of thing at the height of this rate hike? Where are we going?
Mortgage rates have gone up a lot from 2% and 3%. There were some amazing deals.
For sure.
Last I saw, they were just under 7%. So that's a huge increase. Now, you were talking to John Kalamos before I got here, and he reminds us that, you know, he's had mortgages 10%, 12% and higher. So it's something that we can deal with. But it's something that, again, prices have to adjust. I think you're going to see home price increases really slow down, if not contract. That'll work its way through the economy. We're already seeing on the auto side that used car prices have come down quite a bit. So Fed actions work with the lag. And those, you know, a year ago, they were still at zero. Mm-hmm. But they started hiking earlier this year, and that's going to work its way through. So what does it mean for us? Rates are going to stay higher. Prices will adjust. And when you're doing your own planning, don't plan on rates coming down quickly.
So the days of the family selling the used minivan for more than they paid for it might be over now, you think?
Yeah, used cars generally aren't a great investment.
No.
They go up in price, but that's what we've had the last couple years.
Okay, so let's, maybe we pause right here because then we want to get into some of the details. What are you at Kalamos telling your clients? What advice are you giving them? What asset classes do you like? What sectors do you like even?
Sure.
Maybe give us some more specifics about what you like because there's so much not to like, right? We kind of need some guidance. Matt Freund is with Kalamos Investments. He is the co-CIO, head of fixed income strategies, and the senior co-portfolio manager. More in a moment. We've got to go to the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Good news and bad news about prices. First, the average price for gas in Chicago fell over 18 cents a gallon in the last week. Gas Buddy's survey shows the average price at $4.37 a gallon. The bad news, airfares and hotel prices for the holidays are up from last year. Airlines are running fewer flights than in 2019, despite more passengers, and hotels are charging more to cover higher labor costs. Rates for car rentals aren't as crazy as they were during much of last year, although supplies could be tight in some cities. First Lady Dr. Jill Biden is in and around Chicago to start National Apprenticeship Week in conjunction with Aon Corporation, attending an event featuring the company's apprenticeship programs. She's here with three cabinet members, also visiting Rolling Meadows High School. That's your Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Dave Schwann.
And Steve Alexander has the business of food.
Thank you. And one of the biggest business of food events of the year is going on today and tomorrow, which I will talk about after I tell you we're happy to be sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience live in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. In Rosemont today and tomorrow is the Private Label Manufacturers Association's annual Wing Ding. It's kind of a huge matchmaking event. Retailers looking for companies to make their store brands. Or let's say John wanted a Speed Jokes jelly. He could find a jelly maker at the trade show, which is back in person for the first time since COVID.
A lot of people are excited to go, and we will meet with people from all over the world that want companies like ours to package for them.
That's Ron Scadina, who's in Rosemont with a product that caught my eye. steeped coffee.
Incredible coffee. Whole bean ground into a single serve package.
Just add water, which for people of a certain age brings up memories of grandma's god-awful instant coffee. Not to mention some of the most sexist commercials ever.
How can such a pretty wife make such bad coffee?
But steeped coffee is a long way from grandma's days of using freeze-dried and or chemically treated crystals.
This is actually sealed, so it's one cup at a time. We actually use whole beans, so it's freshly roasted. It's in a little tea bag. We capture this incredible fresh ground smell.
Steeped coffee, now 7 years old, has partnerships with Whole Foods, Walmart.
And then if you go to Amazon, you'll see that we have our own store on Amazon.
And much more info at steepedcoffee.com. It partners with several roasters in Illinois and Indiana and is a B-certified company, part of founder Josh Wilbur's goal of being
a guilt-free cup of coffee using fully compostable materials.
And it's another example of the business of good.
As a company, we're about people beyond profit, and we give back 1% of our gross revenue to worthy causes. Right now, we partner with Charity Water, and we're funding a well in Uganda where they didn't have good drinking water.
Steeped coffee. Put the bag in a cup, add hot water. And this is not an endorsement, but I did try it, and it is not your grandmother's instant coffee. From the farm to your belly, today's National Pickle Appreciation Day.
Dilly dilly!
That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
We're back with more financial insights from Calamos Investments. Here's Anna DeVlantis.
And also here's Matt Freund. He's the co-CIO, head of fixed income strategies at Calamos. He's also a portfolio manager there. In charge of a lot of investments, Matt, and you're one of the smart guys in the room at a time like this, and a lot of us aren't feeling so smart because we're seeing our investments, you know, really whittle away. And I think we're looking for some areas where would you go in an environment like this? And I know that depends on the time horizon you're working with, right?
Yeah, that's right. I think the most important question an investor has to ask is, look, is this money that I'm trying to invest in when in the short term, meaning 3 months, 6 months, a year? Or is this money that I'm investing for my retirement, for my kids' college, that I really am going to invest and see through for 5, 10 years or longer? Because it can point you in different directions. So let me give a great example.
Okay.
Over the long term, the best indicator of how you're going to do is really valuations, meaning what you're paying, and how earnings are going to grow over time. There may be ups, there may be downs, but if you have a fairly good read on earnings, and if you know that you're paying a fair price for those earnings, over the long run, the ups and downs average themselves out. Positioning average, it really becomes less important. Over the very short run, though, the most important thing really comes down to the second derivatives. It's not just what earnings or growth is doing. It's, are they accelerating or are they decelerating from expectations? It's not just on rate, interest rates and inflation, but it's, are rates higher than expected or lower than expected? And positioning takes a much bigger role, meaning is the hedge fund community, institutional Wall Street, already largely in and looking for the exits or vice versa? So the analysis is very different.
I hear you on that. Tech is taking a beating. We're seeing a lot of layoffs in the tech sector. We've been reporting that in the news. Do you like energy? People are, would you move into energy at a time like this?
Well, so we talked about energy the last time we were here. I think energy has a lot going for it. So typically, over the cycle, energy, it kind of self-corrects. The sure cure for high prices are high prices, and there's more pumping and more production, and then energy goes into oversupply. This time it's not happening. You can say it's because of the war in Europe. You can say it's because of the administration, but you haven't seen that production response. And I'm not quite sure why. So we do think that energy is attractive, but parts of tech are too. Hmm. So within tech, and one of the things that I'm kidded about is I always say, look, it's not just one stock market or one bond market, but it's a market of individual companies and individual sectors. So profitless tech, tech that is much longer term in terms of being able to show a profit and a return to shareholders, that's really underperformed. And I think it might be too early, certainly in the short run there. But fortress growth companies, they have underperformed, to be sure. But I think that some of these companies have already priced in some recessionary outcomes. I mean, the economic scenarios would have to get much worse than we're anticipating for those companies to underperform from here. Mm-hmm. So there are parts of tech that we like.
So you're thinking some of them have beaten up too badly and there are some opportunities maybe.
Again, you have to look at each sector, but companies with strong balance sheets, companies that have a lot of cash, that are not dependent on whoever wins the House, that are not dependent on whether it's a pivot or a slowdown or a soft landing or a hard landing. There are a lot of opportunities in that space.
Hmm. Small caps, John Calamo said that he thought were an opportunity places to look. What do we mean when we say that, and where are you looking?
Yeah, so to be sure, so small caps typically trade at a premium to their larger brothers and sisters. They're generally faster growing, more nimble, generally have more exposure to U.S. revenues as opposed to overseas, and they have gotten significantly cheaper than they've been in the past. They could, again, in the short run, do they have to rally from here? They don't. But if you're taking that longer term view, I think this is a great entry point for the small cap space.
Okay, the strong dollar is also something that a lot of people are looking at. What does that mean for us?
So in the short run, the strong dollar is a headwind, meaning it takes returns away from earnings that come outside the United States. So the dollar is strong when they take those earnings in euros, yen, whatever the currency is, and translate them back. Mm-hmm. There's less earnings for U.S. investors. So that's hurt international stocks, that's hurt emerging market companies, that's hurt the earnings of large multinationals. But currencies self-correct too. I think the dollar has a lot of momentum in the short run. I'd be surprised if it was this strong, a year or two out from here. So I think there's a lot of positive tailwinds for EM and non-U.S.
earnings. And you said you could travel to Europe right now pretty cheaply, back to our travel theme from before.
Certainly, it's competitive with a lot of U.S. destinations, that's for sure.
Yeah,
and it's cheaper when you get there.
Yeah, because your dollar goes a long way. And that may be something you wanted to take the family there for Thanksgiving. I don't know. They don't celebrate that in most countries, I understand.
Well, certainly not ours.
Other than ours. It's good to see you, Matt. And thank you for your insights. And I just appreciate you folks at Calamos. You know, like I say, at times like these is when we need guys like you and women like you at your firm to help us, stay educated and informed about these important issues. So thank you for that.
Oh, it's my pleasure.